Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Conversations with Eileen. This is episode 18. 18 already, I can't believe it. We've had some really amazing guests bringing really good information to the community on do's and don'ts. We just did fire prevention. We just did Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Very, very important information. And as we get closer to the election, I know that I've been engaging a lot of you with questions and answers in terms of what my role would be. And I thought, you know what? I think we need to hear from the other entity, the other governing agency in Nassau County. And I am so pleased that she said yes. I'd like you to help me give a warm welcome to our County Executive, Laura Curran.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a treat.
County Executive, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be here and answer the questions that the residents have been asking me. And I think, it's very important to get the word out, to get answers to questions that I've been asked. And as I hope to be a future legislator, I know what my roles and my purview are. However, you're the county executive, and sometimes our roles they won't necessarily be the same. We will take different paths to get to the same objective. And I just want to say before we go any further, I think the taxpayers and the residents of Nassau County deserve their governing agencies to continue to communicate for their betterment. And I think that that is something that we don't see and we don't have. And my pledge is, although we may not always agree on things, I will continue to come to the table and communicate and work through and find a solution that is for the betterment of the taxpayers, because I truly do know that that's where your heart is as well.
Well, thank you for that. And I think that you know from your experience as a school board member that we have to work together. We have to work with people who we don't agree with, which is a great thing. It's a blessing that we live in a democracy. We don't live in a totalitarian society like North Korea, where everyone has to march in lockstep. And I think out of the dynamic conversations and the disagreements, if there's an underpinning of respect there, we come up with better answers. We come up with better solutions.
I could have said that better. Perfect. Thank you. So let's dive right into, as I've been out in the community, a couple of things I hear repetitively, and one in particular is roads. Now, Nassau County is a suburban community. We rely heavily on our roads. What initiatives can we look forward to in safer roads, in better paving, in alternative materials?
Yeah, roads are really the biggest topic. I mean, they literally unite us all. We depend on them to get to work, to get to school, to get goods where they need to go. And, just to set the stage a little bit, previous administrations had really let our infrastructure crumble. So, when I got into office, they had been neglected. Bridges had been neglected. And I take infrastructure incredibly seriously. So, I directed my team to embark in a very ambitious road repaving program. And we're doing, I have to say, county roads, we're doing great. We've been breaking our records. We've been paving an unprecedented amount of roads. And I had an ambitious goal for last year. Because of COVID, I set a goal of 150 lane mile roads. We actually exceeded that, about 172. We have a similar goal for this year, 150 lane miles. And I said to my team, no pressure, but we broke it last year. Let's see if we can do it again. And we're on track to getting beyond that. But let's see how we do. So it's incredibly important, as I say, to make sure that our infrastructure is strong. A lot of people who, I'm sure you hear this a lot, Eileen, a lot of people who live here don't know, is it a town road? Is it a county road, a village road? So it's very confusing. And frankly, they don't really care whose it is. They just want the road fixed. So we, a few years ago, when I first got into office, we put up an interoffice, inter, interactive, that's the word I'm looking for, interactive website.
Right.
That's all color coded. What road belongs to who? What's the phone number? Is it a town road? Is it a village road? So people know who to call, who to hold accountable. And of course, if we get calls into our offices, of course, we'll direct people to the right place. You know, enough people are sick of this. Oh, it's this person's or that person's responsibility. So another website we have that we put up on our Department of Public Works site is, if it is our roads, if it is a county road, where is it in the repaving phase? Is it going to be this year? Was it just done? Is it going to, you know, where, when is it going to happen? We want to be as user friendly and give as much information as possible, because roads really are important to our quality of life in so many ways and important to our economy.
Absolutely. And you actually answered the question that I was just going to ask, which is, and you're right, people don't necessarily know who's responsible for what road. Is it a town road? Is it a state road? Because we do have a state road here in East Meadow. Is it a village road? And we want to make sure that the residents that have an issue or, you know, want to see where we are in terms of, you know, when is this road getting done? That I think that's a great initiative. I've seen the interactive map. It's actually, I believe we used an interactive map with snow plowing. I believe we used that.
With which?
With plowing the snow.
Yes.
Yes, I remember.
That's right. That's right.
And that's really important. And, you know, people forget, you know, times go by. We just got through the summer. The winter months are ahead of us. We've had a very rainy summer. Does that mean it's going to be a snowy winter? We'll find out soon enough.
Had an unprecedented, you know, that word is bandied about a lot these days, but we had an unprecedented amount of rain with Hurricane Ida. We had more rain in 1 hour up on the North Shore than we've had since we started keeping records in 1941. So,
yes.
You know, that's something else. Just from Ida alone, our Department of Public Works identified 80 separate projects having to do with drainage, having to do with roads, having to make sure the water flows. And, you know, we're not wasting any time. We're getting to work on those projects.
That's excellent. That was actually a question that I was asked about, our drainage system. I was actually asked that this morning, so that's perfect perfect timing. So the next topic that I am pleasantly surprised to hear a lot of emphasis and compassion is our environment. Now, we live on an island, and we are really at more of a crisis in terms of power outages, in terms of shore erosion that affects our aquifers. So we need to really be very, very aware of how we treat our environment, our land, and the initiatives that we can do to protect this beautiful land for future generations.
You're right, Eileen. We are blessed to live on this beautiful island, but the climate is changing. We're seeing more storms, as I said, more rainfall, wind, and we've got to do everything we can to make sure our drainage is working properly, that our infrastructure is hardened, and also preserving the water beneath our feet from the aquifer. That's the one source of drinking water. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's existential. If we don't have that, forget it.
Right.
Life here is completely altered.
Right.
So we actually are using some of our federal COVID recovery money, our ARP money. We're allowed to use it for water infrastructure. So we're using some of this in grants to our water supplier so they can buy technology or whatever it is they need to help filter out the emerging contaminants in the water underneath of us. We also have to make sure that we're reducing the amount of nitrogen in our shores and what goes into the ground below us. So on the South Shore, we've embarked working with the state on the biggest infrastructure project in our lifetime to clean the nitrogen out of those bays. When that happens, the marshland automatically begins to build back. The ecosystems automatically begin to build back. The shellfish, the marine life. And I mean, that's nice for the environment, but it's also good for us humans, because when the marshland is bigger and stronger, it acts as a better buffer against storm surge. And as we saw with Sandy and these other storms, storm surge is a real threat to our way of life. Same on the North Shore. We have a rebate program using that same money from the federal government giving $20,000 rebates to folks on septic tanks. About, you know, maybe 10% of properties in NASA are still on septics. So if they can update and modernize their septic tanks with new, less nitrogen leaking tanks, that's less nitrogen in the water underneath us, and that's less nitrogen in the northern bays as well, Manhasset Bay, Hempstead Bay, because that marshland has been terribly degraded, more than people realize, over the past decades. So those are things that we can do right now. We're also starting our first bike share program. So look for news of that. That's exciting. At Eisenhower Park and Cedar Creek Park. And we're installing electric vehicle charging stations at 5 county properties across the county. So, and they'll be for public use. So we have to be very serious about what we're doing now. Every choice we make now will have an impact on our future, especially when it comes to the environment.
I completely agree. And, you know, I see it with my own children, which are a little bit older than your children. I do see a generation, you know, coming up, going into the workforce, wanting to stay on Long Island. And they are very, very, very vocal about our environment and our initiatives. And you touched on two things. The filtration in the water department, and I will have you know that East Meadow actually will benefit from some of that CARES money. We happen to fall into one of the districts where our filtration system is outdated and it's not working properly. So that'll be a good thing for my area. The other thing that you touched on, which I think is so important, is you know, people go on their day-to-day lives, they get their kids ready for school, they go to work, they don't realize where our water supply comes from. It comes from underneath the island in aquifers, and they're a limited supply, and they need to be protected. So I think educating the public in, you know, what exactly, how do we live on Long Island, I think is really, really important. So I'm so glad that you touched on those two subjects, because that's something that, you know, I have been speaking about as well.
You know, when we love our lawns, we love our green lawns here on Long Island. One thing we can do is, and actually we have a rebate for this as well, invest in a smart sprinkler system. So one that is sensitive to the rain. So, you know, it's funny when you drive around and you see it's pouring rain and people's sprinklers are going, well, you can save that. Why draw that water out of the aquifer when we don't need it? So just very simple things. I'm not talking about changing our lives or being overly dramatic about this or overly bossy either, but just simple things, common sense things we can do to preserve our environment.
Common sense. I couldn't agree with you more. I am sprinkler challenged, so I manually put mine on.
That's good. That's good.
I haven't figured out a way to use the timer, so my lawn is fine, and I water my plants, so I'm very happy about that. Yeah. Another question that was brought up by a senior citizen in Wantagh, and she had some concerns about as she gets older, safety and being secure in her home. And I know that sitting on the Police Commissioner's Community Council, and of course, you know, I do get your updates as well. We are the safest county in the state. Is that correct?
Actually, in the country for 2 years in a row now. Yeah. So this is a U.S. News and World Report takes a look at the statistics, at the metrics, at the data of 3,000 communities across the country. And twice, this last year and this year, nobody beat us. And that does not happen by accident. We are not defunding the police in Nassau County. In fact, my next year budget adds $45 million to our police budget. We have two fully funded new police classes, two new corrections classes. I fulfilled a campaign promise to reopen two precincts that were closed by the previous administration, Levittown and in Manhasset.
Right.
And nobody said we could do this, but we got a new police academy built that trains our recruits, but the village recruits as well, corrections officers, deputy sheriffs, and other agencies as well. So, and it's right on the grounds of the community college, which is right in the heart of the county. And I believe that will help us with more diverse recruitment, which is something that I'm very focused on. So we're investing in intelligence-led, community-based policing. And I appreciate you sitting on the Commissioner's Community Council. Those are so important because we have got to stay in touch with the stakeholders in all of our communities. We've got to stay in touch with the needs of our growing, diverse communities. I believe a big part of the reason we're safe is because we have excellent men and women in law enforcement who do the job every single day with the utmost professionalism and respect. And we have communities that value public safety. So, you know, you need that relationship, and we're always looking for ways to build the trust between the two.
Yes.
So we've added 3 new PALs for the first time in decades. And we are constantly interfacing with our houses of worships, the mosques, the synagogues, the churches. Yeah. You know, it's that community connectivity that makes the biggest difference. And you're never really done earning trust. It's something that you always have to work on.
Yes, I agree with you. And I was at the Blue Faith event at the New Covenant Church, and I just missed you. So,
oh, yeah, that was a great event. We had one in Cedarhurst as well, which was wonderful, and a Unity Day in Roosevelt.
Yes, it was very well attended, and
yes,
it was great to see the Mounted Police, and they had the narcotics dog there, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, I would agree with you that creating more events like that is going to create unity. And ultimately, I think that's where we will have our strength, is bringing entities together, building trust. And I think that's extremely important. One of the things that I do know from my podcast with Dr. Jeffrey Reynolds is I know that fentanyl is on the rise. So being prepared with these extra police officers, kind of, you know, having boots on the ground, I think is going to be paramount in addressing that.
Agreed. I mean, we were making really great strides against the opioid epidemic. We're seeing our overdoses, both fatal and non-fatal, going down. With the pandemic, I'm sure you've seen this.
Yeah.
I've seen it in my community and in all over the county, you know. Real mental health problems are rising. More substance abuse, more depression, more anxiety, insecurity about the world. And also a rising vitriol in our public discourse as well. You know, everyone's sort of bunkering in their own sides. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for young people. And we're finding too many people are seeking the solace of and the numbness of opioids. There's terrible new chemicals. It seems, you know, with fentanyl, it's just stronger than, you know, 50 times as potent.
Scary.
So we want to make sure that, again, we're treating it from a law enforcement point of view, making sure that we have zero tolerance for drug dealing, and that if you deal drugs, you will be caught and you will be held accountable. You will go to jail.
Yes.
However, you can't just do it by that alone. You have to talk to people where they are. So talking to young people before they even think about drugs in an appropriate way, age-appropriate way. Talking to parents, talking to school districts, community members. So Operation Natalie, which is, I think, why we had such success, it was education, awareness, outreach. I think that's a big part of the reason we started to go it down. With COVID, we couldn't do those community meetings anymore. We couldn't do those family visits anymore. So we're re-engaged with that from a law enforcement point of view. And folks like Jeff Reynolds and the Family and Children's Association and our wonderful nonprofits provide such a resource. We just want to make sure that people know about it, that they can connect with it. And that my overriding message is there is help when you feel helpless. There is hope when you feel hopeless. You just have to ask for it. And while we're on here, I just want to throw out a number, a phone number. It's a 24/7 hotline.
Mm-hmm.
It's 516-227-TALK.
Okay.
And whatever is going on, substance abuse, domestic violence, suicide thoughts, whatever it is, there is help available. Just please trust that.
And as you said, you know, it's unfortunate that we were on such a great trajectory and then the pandemic hit. And as Dr. Reynolds said, you know, people could back their car up to the liquor store, pop the trunk, and cases of margarita and wine and everything else because we were quarantined, and it became too easy a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And then what happens? And then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to have those resources there. And I've shared my story with my ex-husband and his substance abuse. I'm very proud to say he's 6 years clean. But that didn't happen overnight. That happened because there were resources available. And he was ready. And so I think that that's really important. Let's keep the conversation going. Let's make sure that the resources are out there and support those resources.
Yeah.
So one last question, or actually not really a question. I'm sure you know the affection that I have with our local veterans. They have truly become my family. And when they are in need, I can never say no to them. I'm always there. The Vet Mart is a resource that is in our own backyard. So is there a way that we can look to expand other resources so that veterans locally can go to NUMC and not necessarily out to Suffolk County? Some may not drive. I know as an optician, as you get older, your night driving becomes more impaired. And so you don't want to drive at night.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Suffolk County is home to about 50,000 veterans. And we have a very robust veteran services agency led by Ralph Esposito, who brings such passion and hard work to the job. He and Paul and the team are incredible. Throughout the pandemic, they kept that Vet Mart open, delivering food when they needed, getting veterans to appointments, making sure they had what they need. And honestly, it's the least we can do to thank those who risk their lives for us to protect our beautiful freedoms. So when it comes to direct care at NUMC, I actually have a big ask in for the federal infrastructure bill, close to $200 million to create specialized veterans care right at NUMC, right at NUMC. So they don't have to go to the city. So they don't have to go to Northport. Something that can actually help them right here in the heart of the county in East Meadow. We also want to use some of this money to create a veterans village on the campus of NUMC. There's a big campus with some unused space.
Okay.
So we want to create specialized housing for veterans right there, along with like day programs for them as well, so that they have socialization and any intervention that can happen will happen there. So I have the ask in. It will also help with the overall mission of NUMC to serve our most vulnerable population.
Right.
And, you know, as the only standalone hospital in Nassau County, we want to get as much support there as we can. Because as we saw during the pandemic, NUMC needs to survive and it needs to continue to serve our most vulnerable.
I agree. That is wonderful news. You just made my day with that great information. I am so happy and I will make sure that I pass that along to our veterans who really, not only have they sacrificed, they give back so much. They do toy drives and they actually help other veterans. So this is going to be great, great, great news. And I thank you so much for sharing that. So I always like to give the last word to my guest. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us before
about your day? So I just have to say, I love Nassau County residents. They're so smart and lovely. And I just have to congratulate all of us, all of our communities. We are the number one vaccinated county in all of New York State. So of all 62 counties, we have the highest number of highest percentage of folks vaccinated. So if you're folks 18 and older, more than 93% of them have had at least one dose of the vaccine. And my approach is always positive, removing barriers to access, doing outreach and doing education, talking about why it's effective, keeping that positive approach, I think is really getting results. And I just have to thank our whole community, our beautiful Nassau County community, for coming together to make sure that we can put COVID as tiny as we can in the rearview mirror and come back strong.
I think we're all ready for that. I think we're all ready for 2022 to come and bring a breath of fresh air.
Amen.
County Executive, thank you so much for taking the time. I think that we've shared some really good information, and I hope that we've answered a lot of the questions that I've been asked, and I'm sure you've been asked. So thank you again so much. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, Eileen, this was a lot of fun. Thank you very much for having me. This was great.
And you stay safe.
You too.